listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And what a day it is today.
What a day it has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why it's almost like being
in love.
Like I've had three espressos and half a pack of Luckies. That's how I am. I'm caffeinated, Michael.
You are.
I'm caffeinated.
Well,
I am.
Nothing new about that.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm, you know, excited because it's Oscar nomination announcement day today.
Yes, right? It is. What a surprise. A lot of surprises, actually.
Yes,
a lot of
I think so. How many? Well, we'll get to all of
this. Yeah, we will.
But
we will.
First off, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Express and Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
And we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Indeed. And in studio today, Paul, we are delighted, as you know, to have two esteemed members of LA's vibrant theater community. In the first part of the hour, we'll meet a writer, performer, and actor whose acclaimed work, A Negro Speaks of Rivers, will be coming to the Allen Theater in Claremont, California. Please welcome Margaret Lorena Kemp.
Welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
And
thank
you for bringing all those folks with you.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it.
I always bring my entourage.
It's production value.
Extra chairs in
exactly.
The lobby today.
And an old friend of State of the Arts who we always enjoy spending time with when he drops by, a man who likes his relations public. Marketing manager for the Nederlander Organization's Broadway in L.A. at the Pantages, the lovely, the talented Benny Aguayo joins us.
Hey. What? Sorry, my entourage is a little slow in the uptake. There was a half a second delay.
They're drunk again.
I'm just really happy there's no webcam in here because of all these forget my pants. Oh, my goodness.
It is no pants Thursday.
No pants Thursday.
Time for the no pants dance. Here we go.
Yes.
So, Paul, let me ask you a question. How was your week?
And my week was fine until yesterday.
What happened?
It was fine until yesterday.
What happened?
Yesterday, Monica and I are going to Italy this year. My great deal of my family is there, and I haven't seen them in 20 years, and I'm going to go see them, and some of them come here, but it's always good. We go over there, and we should exploit it more. We get carried around on a velvet pillow for 2 weeks.
Wow.
It's great. You can't pay for anything. You tell someone you like something, and they give it to you. You know, it's great. But I had to get the new passport.
Uh-oh.
And
that new photo?
Wow. It wasn't even the new photo. It was handing in the old photo and going,
Please let me keep that.
No, it's just giving it to the person at the post office. In case you're interested, here's a photo of my grandson, if you'd like to take a look at it.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
It was a little like, you know... It was unnerving.
It was not the picture of Dorian Gray?
No, it was the picture of the Crypt Keeper.
Oh.
I think that's what it was.
And,
of course, it doesn't help that when you have a wife like I do, who is just 3 years younger than me at 45, but still looks like she's 21 years old and still gets carded. So as our relationship progresses, I just look like more and more of a perv as time goes on.
Oh,
she stays the same, and I age. And, you know,
they're going to be watching you on their plane on the way
I know.
Over
it's
there,
a, well,
know?
Well, it's either. But here in Hollywood, everyone thinks that they don't think I'm a perv. They just think I'm a producer.
Right.
I think that's the primary thing. You know, how was your week?
It was good. Busy. You know, we have opened LA's Next Great Stage Star.
Yes.
2013, which, Margaret, is a musical theater competition that we produce every year.
Okay. Great.
In fact, the wonderful Broadway LA and Pantages Theater is one of our supporters. And we have many, many people in the community that are judges who come to discover brand new talent right out of the gate. They're coming in from all the universities, USC, UCI, Fullerton, UCLA, and it's very exciting. So our first week up was last Sunday, and the competition is 90% sold out now.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. And the finale will go clean probably by the time I get back to the office this afternoon.
Wow.
That's incredible.
Very, very exciting. And
I mean, it's always successful, but this is very early for a sellout, isn't it?
And careers are born out of this competition. We've had eight as of this past weekend, eight of our contestants from previous years since 2007 have all now made their Broadway debuts.
That's wonderful.
They jump out of the competition. They're signed by the agents who are judges in the amongst the judges in the competition. And boom, they have a professional life. Many of them get to leave their day jobs and just do theater. And then they go on to New York, or New York calls them.
Now, it ends up with 20. You end up with 20 contestants
20,
at the start of it, right?
Yeah.
Now, how many, if I can you give me an approximation of how many people auditioned?
About 200 this year, a little over 200.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's great.
Yes, it's become, the buzz on this thing has become amazing during the past, you know, many years that we've been doing it. Because the kids, they get critiqued live in front of the audience. Mm-hmm. So they find out a piece of information.
They learn.
That they learn by, which they never find out at an audition, other than the words thank you in most cases, unless they're hired for the show.
But to comment on that, Michael, having attended it and seen it, what I like so much about it is that, unlike the television-based one, where it's all about creating heroes and villains and these things, even though the critiques are genuine and accurate, they are in a climate of such support for these young performers that they never feel, they're not victimized, they're not, you know, so it's a nurturing thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Paul, for pointing that out, too. We're very passionate about what we do in the performing arts in Los Angeles, this being a part of it, and giving these young people an opportunity that they would otherwise never really have for quite a while, you know, because they're still either in school or they're jumping they've just, you know, graduated from university. So, so you come and see it again.
I will.
From high school to college and just watching what they do on Broadway, to know that you saw them in their earliest years is really
It's
nice.
Funny, yeah, because I remember I do some graphic work for Michael assembling the program for him for this event, and it's just funny to be on Broadway World or looking at websites or just reading about shows and just seeing a name and going, yeah, I remember I put their bio in America's Next Great Stage Store 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
I think one of my greatest joys is when a national tour comes by and I recognize a name in the playbill that's coming for a show coming to the theater. I'm like, he was in my class. She was in my class.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a small class of about 45 people.
For those that don't know, listeners, this is the Pantages where Benny is currently.
But I'm a UCLA Theater, Film, and Television alum, and I'm so proud of my graduating class because I have so many talented people that have all ended up on Broadway. Shows like Book of Mormon, Mamma Mia, Lion King, it's just, I'm so happy.
Well, you know, speaking of UCLA and what I was just talking about, these kids jumping into their Broadway debuts, Derek Klena, which may not be a name that you're going to recall necessarily.
Who's on our show?
Derek was.
Yeah.
Now, Derek jumped out of the competition, went into starring roles here in regional theater, and then was found on YouTube from performances from LA's Next Great Stage Star by Stephen Schwartz and also Mark Shaman, and both contacted him directly. They brought him into New York, and he starred in Carrie the Musical off Broadway, which just happened about a year and a half ago. And unfortunately did not, it had its sights on the big stage on Broadway, but it didn't happen. And then he went right into the lead in Dogfight off Broadway, which did have a remarkable response in the Broadway community there, and was written by the team that wrote Wicked. So now Mr. Klena is going to be a part of that phenomenal show as the male lead.
Wow.
Fiera.
That's
Broadway.
Incredible.
Yeah. It just boom. These are the things that happen, you know?
Wow.
That's great. Well, continued success with it, Michael.
Thank you so much.
You know, I want to jump right into our guests here because we're going to have weeks and weeks to talk about the Oscars.
Sure.
So we'll just, I'd rather.
You
want
to jump into your guests?
I want to jump into the guests. Yeah, it's that kind of
like
show. Well, I don't have pants on, so.
I've eaten in the last 24 hours.
Okay. And our first guest is a veteran stage actor who's appeared in over 50 theatrical productions worldwide. She has won international acclaim for her work as the leading lady, Lena, in the 2011 release Children of God. Is it Lena or Lena?
Lena.
And her favorite roles include The Duchess of York and Richard III. Killer role. With the Independent Shakespeare Company, Rose in the Cider House Rules at the Mark Taper Forum right here in Los Angeles, and Felicity in a Farndale Christmas Carol at Santa Barbara's Ensemble Theater Company. She's here today to discuss an upcoming performance of her original theater piece, A Negro Speaks of Rivers. Please welcome Margaret Lorena Kemp.
Thank you.
Hello.
How are you? I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm very excited to meet you, Margaret. We have a mutual friend that we've both worked with named Paul Buxton. And
yay,
Paul and I
Paul.
Did the show, did Flea in Her Ear at mm-hmm. the Edgemar
yes.
Center for the Arts
right.
A year ago. And he could not speak highly enough of you, Margaret. And he said, this is someone you have to have on your show. I'm only sorry it took so long to get you here. But if we could just hit the ground running, can you give just a synopsis? Is it possible to give a synopsis of A Negro Speaks of Rivers? Or let's start with the nod to Langston Hughes, because it is a Langston Hughes poem, correct?
Right. The yeah. Langston Hughes poem is actually The Negro Speaks of Rivers. So, yes, it does reference that metaphorically, because what we're talking about are the rivers that are within us as individuals, as well as the land and how that shapes you going through life.
Okay.
But it's funny.
But it's funny?
No, I mean,
because that Langston Hughes, he was a knee slapper boy.
It sounds heavy, but of course there is humor, right. There is music, but it does sound heavy, and I just wanted to let people know it's fun. It's yeah. a fun show.
Yeah. And when you say there's music, are you vocally or just music that
there is music?
It?
And naturally, there is vocally. I wrote songs for this production, which I actually wrote songs for my other show also, and these songs are actually sung in Spanish, in Cante style singing, which is more bending towards flamenco and jazz, mm-hmm. which is part of my cultural heritage. Yeah.
And it's only a 30-minute theater piece?
Nope, it's an hour and 10 minutes.
An hour? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But it seems like 30 minutes because
it flies by.
It
exactly.
does. There's exactly. no intermission, yeah. so it seems like 30 minutes.
So is a synopsis possible? Is it possible
yeah,
to,
I would
wrap
say
it up?
That, to wrap it up?
Into
it,
one,
it takes place within the seconds between seeing somebody for the first time after many, many years pass. And I like to think of it as all of the pictures in your mind as that person approaches the life between you sort of comes into focus, and that's what comes into focus in the course of the play. And the history that's told is the history of the small neighborhood. I grew up in a Caribbean neighborhood in Boston, and it's a story that a lot of people don't know. The neighborhood was called Symphony Road, and over the course of just a few years, there were a stream of arson fires that turned out history, it was the police were involved, a lot of people were involved, the mayor, and it was
oh
a lot
gosh.
Of exchange of money over these fires. And so the story tells the history of this small neighborhood. Oh. And it's told in the seconds between my father saying hello to me after me not seeing him for, I would say, 20 years.
Wow. Now, you said that your particular heritage and your culture, I noticed in the promotional material, is not really represented, I sound like Elmer Fudd, represented theatrically. And it's I'm sure that the show has been embraced because of that, giving this a voice.
Yeah, this is a story that's never been told. In fact, when I first started sending the script out, a lot of people asked me if it were a true story. So I had to give like a little biographical history of the neighborhood. But it is a true story and told through a voice that hasn't been on the stage up to now.
Right. Now, you've done this before a number of times. You did it in South Africa, is that correct?
I went to South Africa. I'm pretty lucky with my solo performances. The other one I toured for a lot. And this one I actually did as a work in progress at the Electric Lodge in Venice.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody from the audience, Sarah Matchett, from the Mother Tongue Theater Company in South Africa, happened to be on the audience that night. And she called me up about a week later, and she said, I really feel like this show would speak to a South African audience because they've had certain problems in their neighborhoods. And believe it or not, we're all just one people.
And where in South Africa did you do this?
I did it at Out the Box Theater Festival, which mm-hmm. is the big theater festival in South Africa. And
what
I also,
city?
In Cape Town.
In Cape Town, which
and
I have been to.
Have you?
Yes.
Oh, really?
One of the great experiences of my life, mm-hmm. going to Cape Town.
And then I went to the Magnet Theater in South Africa, and I did it there as well. And to be honest, I did a work in progress of it also in Greece about 2 years ago. And when I did it in Greece, it was the same response. People came up to me And they were like, this is my neighborhood. This is my neighborhood in Bosnia. This is my neighborhood here. And I'm like, really? Who knew?
Because it's about people at the end of the day.
Of course. Yeah.
And I think that it really speaks to, there is a transformative power in theater. I work with a lot of young people, and I've brought people to the Pantages and other theaters all around the United Los Angeles area. And there is a power to it. And people, if you give an audience a chance to embrace something, they will. But you have to give them the chance.
Sure.
And that's what it's all about.
I'm sorry, I have a curious question here. How do you as an individual get that work out there? I mean, the instance of the woman seeing, being the promoter of it going to South Africa, but then it's gone to other places. Has that just all happened for you, or did you try to reach out into those?
I try to reach out, and I continue to try to reach out. It's shortlisted for, I'm going to say, an unnamed festival in New York for 2013, but it's not easy. It's not easy because I'm not a big company. I don't have any grants. I'm just a girl with a dream and a show. And just try to get
sometimes
it out.
That's all it takes.
But she, Margaret said something very funny before when we were in the lobby before we came into the studio. She was talking about, because we were talking about our mutual interest in one person shows, as I did one for many years. And she said, when she saw, was it Monster in a Box?
Yeah.
Monster in a Box, Spalding Gray's great monologue,
right.
One-person show, and she just saw it on TV, and she said, that's me. And she goes, sometimes I think maybe I should watch movies and see people in movies go, that's me. Because it's a fairly thankless, can be a thankless thankless thing up there alone.
And
you know.
It's hard because they're... Yeah. I'm every day I'm reading the script, and people are like, why do you read the script every day? You wrote it. And I thought, I'm on the stage by myself.
Yeah.
There's nobody to help me.
Yeah.
It's like a house of cards, this text. It's extremely tight. And if I skip one word in the beginning, because it's going to echo at the end, it's not going to be there.
You have an extraordinary story to tell, the lights, the scenery, everything, the rickety-rackety, as much as we love seeing that on a Broadway stage, it really is all about the conversations that are generated with the individuals who see the story.
Sorry, and it's funny you say that. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Benny, but you're echoing something that Margaret mentioned earlier, is that in this particular performance that she's doing, you've trimmed it to the bone, right?
I trimmed it to the bone.
Yeah.
It was developed without any bells and whistles, no video, nothing. It was rehearsed originally, no bells and whistles, no video, anything. But because time and I like video, I have developed some. But I've gone back to the show, which I love and people love. It's been proven to me. I mean, you can't do a show in a place like Athens, Greece, telling a story about Boston, Massachusetts, and have people come up to you and say, I love this, if there's nothing there.
Right.
So just really trust it.
And just have faith in your audience because, the expectations of your audience will be risen if you rise to the occasion yourself, which you clearly have done.
What was that term you used just now, Benny? The rigida? The rigida ragida?
Rickety rack.
Rickety rackety.
Rickety rackety. Okay, I'm writing that down.
It's right there next to tchotchkes.
yeah. Rickety rackety. Perhuddled. Perhuddled is another great word.
In lieu of bells and whistles.
In lieu of bells and whistles, yeah. It's a more cultured version of bells and whistles.
Rickety rackety is more cultured?
To me it is.
High five to me.
That's
right.
Now, Margaret, when you were in South Africa, you also joined the faculty at the University of Cape Town,
I understand,
and were a guest lecturer.
I was a guest lecturer. I was. I teach voice and movement. My area of voice, I like to always let you know, in Fitzmaurice's voice work, which is a very physical approach to text. And I also work with the Michael Chekhov work, and they actually never had somebody whose area of specialization is of that in South Africa at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the first time that they had someone actually teaching in those areas specialization
in
Cape Town. So it was
a very special place in the world, Cape Town. Mm-hmm.
Why were you there, Michael? What brought you there?
I was there on tour with Andy Gibb. We were going through the world at that point, and we actually played in a city called Sun City, which was very much like Las Vegas, frowned upon during that particular time because of all of the political...
Mm-hmm.
Stevie Van Zandt wrote that song, Don't Want to Go to Sun City.
Yes, exactly. And we were the last act in before all of that kind of came down. But it was a fascinating experience, and then to leave that particular area, which is very kind of cloistered, you know, Sun City, and we thought it was built on a burial ground, actually. There were some very odd goings on spiritually throughout mm-hmm. there. We went on a safari, a real deal safari.
Right, right.
Extraordinary.
A real safari, not just a moving like camp it. For rich white people.
Yeah. Waving at the animals.
Yeah, right. Look. You know, where they hold up pictures of animals and just tell you that they're animals. Yeah.
For fun, they give the animals hunting rifles.
Now that I'd go to.
It wasn't until Cape Town for me that it kind of all came full circle. You know, legend has it that the Garden of Eden is there.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of feel something so unique about that city. With animals, large animals crossing, at least it was when I was there, crossing the highways as you're driving.
The baboons.
Yes. Yeah, and you have to stop for them.
Yes.
You know.
I would imagine so. Yeah. Yeah, geez.
And
the same thing happens, though, when I cross the street. That's what the drivers
on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. A lot of baboons.
Huge rhinoceros cross the street. Please
stop.
But you can actually, Paul, and I'm sure you did this, you must have, you can actually stand on the very tip of Africa. You can walk down to it.
Yeah.
And you see the Indian Ocean on one side, and mm-hmm. you see the Atlantic on the other, and you see that amazing merging of these two waters at different temperatures.
Oh, wow.
Which caused, of course, you know, all of the terrible sinking of ships before in past times that would get lost at sea there.
Oh,
it's
wow.
It's a hard corner to turn and the ships to make it, and yet it's fascinating. I think there's a lighthouse, actually, at that very tip.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It's what we've seen on maps all of our lives as kids learning about history,
yeah,
where the
yeah.
countries are. Man, wow. You're just right there. You can go no further.
I would be all over that.
Yeah.
Because one of my 50th is they do a thing. Monica and I are talking about what we're going to do for my 50th, and they offer a motorcycle safari in South Africa where you have 5 days on motorcycles going through South Africa,
and
I can't imagine anything cooler than that.
Yeah,
that would be
awesome. Pretty sweet.
Before I forget, and we're certainly not done talking about it, I want to throw the information out there for A Negro Speaks of Rivers with Margaret Kemp, who is with us here today. It's January 31st at 7 p.m. This is at the Allen Theater, 300 East Bonita in Claremont, California. And to RSVP or to make reservations, it's a free performance, actually.
That's right. So, Mellon Grant Foundation.
Oh, yes. Mellon Grant. Mm-hmm. And the number is 213-300-5412. That's 213-300-5412. So people call and are put on the list there for that. And
again, it is limited seating.
And limited seating. 7 p.m. January 31st, Allen Theater, 300 East Bonita in Claremont. And we will throw that out
and
there.
And the nice thing, Paul, about that is that public transportation is accessible by Metrolink.
I like
that.
Get there.
Yes.
Yeah? We like that.
We love
anything
that.
To do.
Anywhere in Los Angeles, we dig that.
And any way to get you to the theater, ladies and gentlemen, take advantage of it.
Well,
yeah.
Good.
Absolutely.
Good. All right, let's throw our, give our little prize away, Michael.
Yes.
You want to do that?
Absolutely.
You want to kick that off?
And then we'll
talk to Benny here. And
I've just
both
been here sniffing the Lysol on the mic.
Well, in other words, ladies and gentlemen, it is time again for our State of the Art Sweepstakes sponsored by Breakdown Services. Each week, or almost each week, we raffle off a different prize to a fan of State of the Art. The prizes are furnished by Breakdown Services and include free yearly subscriptions to Casting About, casting agent directories, free video uploads for actors, headshot retouching, even a free year of unlimited submissions on Actors Access. To enter, all you have to do is like us, that would be Paul and I, and our show, State of something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what it
like us on our State of the Arts Facebook page by visiting there. So, Paul, spin that wheel.
But before I do, I want to talk to you because we throw these terms out there. I want to make sure that people know. Casting About is a fascinating service, and it's a good thing for actors. I don't know if you know how it works, but, you know, everyone wants to send their postcards or whatever to casting directors.
Yeah.
Casting About lets you generate a list of, I mean, they do a lot of things. It's actually an online database that helps people, but one of their services is generating these labels. So you can look at casting directors, you can pick the shows that these casting directors currently have that are suited to your age or physical type or whatever, click a button, and you generate labels just for that. So it's like focused mailings for people, so it saves a lot of money. So,
Very nice.
We throw these terms around. Yeah. I don't know if people know these services, but
that's why they have to go to Breakdown Express.
Exactly.
Learn about these services.
Exactly. So I'm spinning the wheel?
Yes,
is that
you
what
are.
I'm doing? Okay, hang on to your hat.
Okay. That is the saddest thing I've ever heard.
I know. I'm even going to do that again. Oh, man. Oh,
it's even more sad this afternoon.
I'm just going to spin this thing.
Round and round she goes. Today's winner is Iva Franks Singer from Los Angeles, California. She will receive unlimited submissions on Actors Access for a full year.
Yes.
And Iva, if you're listening, congratulations. And we will also alert you through our Facebook page. So thank you so much. Great to have her.
Wow. All over that. Yeah.
That's great.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
It's a year. A year is, you know, it's like $80. That's something.
I know. Well, hey.
You know?
Yeah. You got to take advantage of anything you can get. As an actress, not wanting something for free? Unheard of.
Kill the actors. What's that line from Producers? Kill the actors. You can't kill the actors. They're human beings. Oh, yeah? Did you ever eat with one?
That's right.
All right, who we got? Who we got, Michael?
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is the marketing manager and in charge of public relations and communications for the Nederlander organization's Broadway LA at the Pantages Theater. He graduated from the University of Phoenix with an MBA in marketing and studied theater production at the University of California at Los Angeles. Since 2000, he has also performed in Fantasmic, the nighttime spectacular at Disneyland Resort in Anaheim, California. Please welcome our friend, Benny Aguayo.
Thank you. That is the greatest entrance music ever. Thank you very much.
So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You guys look fantastic. How's everything going?
Oh, good.
Better than your
did you say look fantastic?
Yes.
Oh, you haven't seen my passport photo.
Oh, my last passport photo, I was 10 years old.
I look like Keith Richards after the accident. That's what I look like.
He had an accident?
Your last passport photo was when
last time I traveled out of the country, I was 10 years old. I went to Rome to sing with the Pueri Cantores, my school, Sacred Heart Parish, and our choir director, Patrick Flahive, assembled the International Council of these three different Catholic schools in the Southland.
Holy cow.
We got to sing for Pope John Paul II, and this was in 1993.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was me and my mom went, and it was one of the most breathtaking experiences I've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I've been studying music and performing since I was very, very young. My dad did a performance of The Sound of Music in 1990 at the Redondo Beach. It was called the Aviation Auditorium back then, and now they've since renamed themselves. But after I saw him do that, I'm like, oh, I want to do that for a living. I just don't know how I want to do that for
a living. That's it. That was your Spalding Gray moment that we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I'd have seen that.
But to be 10 and in Rome.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. I was in way over my head, but that's because the Sistine Chapel is about 40 feet above your head when you're looking at
you
it.
You know, I've never been there. I'm sure you've been there to Rome, right, Paul?
No, we always stay in northern Italy because the family's there and they won't let you out of their sight.
I thought when we were there they were electing a new pope. But as it turns out, just everyone smokes, so you just see.
Oh,
wow.
Wah, wah. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'm a little late on the uptake there.
You know, I didn't know.
There you go.
Get out of here, please.
Sorry, it's all I got.
Who let the trumpeter in?
It's all
trombone player.
Michael, what were you saying?
I was going to say, I have never been. I am a Catholic by birth and through my parents' insistence.
And now you're a recovering Catholic?
I'm a recovering Catholic. No, you know what? Here's how I handle all of that. I certainly believe in God and everything that He's done for me and all of us in this world and creating it. And my moments, my best moments of Catholicism are when I am sitting in a Catholic church by myself and having a conversation with God.
I believe in tamales on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
As a good Mexican Catholic boy.
Yes.
So, and I believe that God put tamales there for just for me. So thank you.
That's another way of looking at it.
I'm one of the few Italian Protestants.
Really?
Because my mother is German and my father is Italian. Uh-huh. So, of course, you're half Italian and half German. You know, very passionate in your need to control the world. And my mother, my father converted for my mother. So he was Catholic. She's Protestant. So now we go to all these family functions, and I have no idea when to kneel and when to stand. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on with all the Catholic ritual.
It doesn't. Yeah, there's a little pomp and circumstance there, but it doesn't really make any difference. I went to Mass straight from your lovely Christmas party, you and your wife's Christmas party, right after that. It's important to me that I honor God in a way that is, in Christ, in a way that is, you know, meant to be. I'm with it. It's the spirit of the holiday. It means something to me. I have a lot to be thankful for. I would rather be there in his presence, in the presence of others, thanking him officially on that particular day.
And I love God, but my religion is the theater.
Good segue, Penny. Good segue.
Thank you.
Indeed.
My dad was in radio for 30 years, so he knows how to reel it back when necessary.
Yeah.
And coming up at the Pantages, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Fun fact, Ted Neely is in Django Unchained. I just saw that film yesterday.
Is he really?
Yes, he's one of the trackers. And Tom Wopat plays the sheriff.
Oh, wow.
So we were missing a musical number somewhere in that film.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Ted Neely, who did, for the listeners who don't know, Ted Neely is the portrayed Jesus in the film of Jesus Christ Superstar. And still touring.
Yeah.
Still touring. Well, and he also...
In places. I mean, we actually hosted him at the...
Like special events.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but he's become a fully ordained minister, too.
You know what? I noticed that because I figured that had to be the case because it was funny. There's one story I'll tell about Ted is that lovely, lovely gentleman, but we were backstage and he was actually blessing people blessing cast members as they came back. I'm like, is he blessing? I'm like, oh, really? He's saying a little prayer with them because at the time he had already become an ordained minister.
Yeah.
I'm like, thinking, wow, he really is a method actor.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
And how vocally, how is he at this point?
Oh, always great.
Yeah.
He's always great.
Because he was fantastic.
Well, and it's also, because he has that stepladder tenor. And it's just, but it still has that rock edge to it, that great sort of shrill that has got that great finish. And also, let's not forget, was it Carl Anderson who was Judas in that? Who just, you know, I love the Brown album, the original recording of Jesus Christ Superstar with Murray Head as Judas and Ian, the guy from Deep Purple, Ian something, the lead singer for Deep Purple at the time.
That the original concept album you're referencing?
The original one, because they were smart. They were like, let's let the music live on its own, because people will be shaky about us showing Jesus' life on stage. Right. So they did it as a studio recording first, and then before. Right. But Carl Anderson, as Judas in the film, just burns it down.
I actually saw it and reviewed it on behalf of a television columnist that I was working for at that time who had a gossip segment in the news on one of our local stations here and columns in the New York newspapers and Los Angeles newspapers. At any rate, I went and saw it for the first time when it was first up on his feet here in Los Angeles at the Hollywood Bowl. Well, which was quite extraordinary. It was done as a concert version at that point.
You know, one of the best productions of Jesus Christ Superstar I ever saw was the one that was produced by McCoy Rigby, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of McCoy Rigby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Tell ya.
Like he's going to be nervous that we're not going to bring it around to the
He's a Segway Smith.
He's
a Segway Smith.
Well, you're
speaking of McCoy Rigby, what, Benny? He said knowingly.
Oi, what? No.
No, very excited about that. Yeah. She's
Kathy
back.
Kathy Rigby was on our show during the summertime. She called in.
That's right. That's right. We had her on. She was a lovely person, at least on the phone she was. And she's back. And
after 8 years not being at the Pantages, the last time we hosted her was around the time that I had started working at the theater. And it was I started in 2003, and the tour came in 2004. The most consummate professional
she
you've
is.
Ever worked
with. Unbelievable.
And, you know, who knows what I'll be bragging about when I'm 60 years old as to what I can do. But, you know, Kathy, having just, I mean, it's no secret how old she is. We all remember her, you know, being a gymnast in her very early teen years.
Right.
But, you know, having just turned 60 years old and this new tour, adding in brand new flying stunts and effects and, you know, working with Paul, the fly guy, you know, that she's worked with for over 30 years, working in these brand new stunts is just spellbinding.
Yes,
and,
unbelievable.
And, oh, I know, absolutely. And the Nederlander organization is actually in partnership with McCoy Rigby, and we are the co-producers, co-presenters.
Oh, really?
Of this national tour across the country. Absolutely.
Fantastic. How is that? I mean, the Pantages is such a historic structure. It's such a beautiful room to be in, to see shows in. It's one of the. It's like seeing when I see a movie. You know, if there are three or four different places to see it, I always try to go to Grauman's Chinese just to sit in that room. And it's the same feeling I have at Pantages, because you're steeped in that history. But when you get something like Peter Pan, which is so, you know, technically difficult, I don't mean on the other side of the proscenium,
in
the house. How does that work? I mean, does it require a lot of, you know, extra equipment for the show?
I think it all depends on the production that's in the theater. I mean, you know, it's certainly if any of our stagehands from our fantastic unions were here, they'd be able to provide you with a wealth of knowledge of what it takes to rig the chandelier for Phantom of the Opera rig the dragon for Wicked, etc. But, you know, with something like Peter Pan, safety is the first and foremost important thing.
Because she goes out over the house and everything,
right? Oh, yeah,
that's
cool. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
That's going to be cool.
When you see what she does on the stage side of the proscenium, it's just amazing. I mean, like, you know, it's very simple. It's men on ropes behind the Neverland set, behind the nursery, working in perfect coordination. It's a very much a choreographed dance
like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing Kathy, but Kathy said I've heard her say multiple times, if you don't choreograph it a certain way, she's going to go right through the wall. But, you know, you watch her fly in and land on a dime right in the middle of the nursery, and it's like, you just get astounded when you watch something like that.
It's a dance in the air, basically.
It really is.
Yeah,
you know, and it's also a piece, obviously, you know, all of us are going to be familiar with the story and the Disney version of this, but quite frankly, this stage version, it can't compare to anything. There's nothing like this at all.
Absolutely.
And the child in every one of us, you know, comes right out in that theater. I mean, I've seen the show before, and I would be doing myself a disservice if I didn't see it every time it came through town, because it's that wonderful of an experience, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit.
And for anyone's children who have never seen it before, it is an obligation of yours to take your child to see this production at the Pantages Theater, which opens on January 15th, and it runs through the 27th of January, and see the magic that is Kathy Rigby as Peter Pan. And believe me, the New York Times, people like the New York Times and every other paper in the country, says that she still, of course, carries off all of the flights, the fights, the acrobatics, and it totally is mesmerizing, and I mean that truly. It certainly was for me.
Right, you know, just the funny thing is, I watch actors on stage, and you know, you can get a 60-year-old actor or actress on stage playing a 10-year-old boy. When you get to a certain age, you're willing to let go more of some of the things that you that restricted, you know, certain tendencies or reactions or instincts, you know. I mean, you can let go and you can be a little more free with it, and that's what's really nice about seeing her on stage.
You know, I had the great pleasure of having the entire cast come to Sterling's upstairs at the Federal and do an evening of fundraising for Kathy's favorite charity, Discover Arts, that's the name of it. And boy, were they fantastic. From the gentleman you're talking about that backstage that are doing all that flying to the cast and the performers in the cast performing on the stage.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic evening. We did it during the summertime. So after Peter Pan.
What's
next?
This is quite a very unique situation for not only Pantages Theater, but for L.A. Because, as we know, as it usually goes, a show will go and play, you know, an out-of-town tryout, perhaps, but will usually play Broadway before going on the road. Los Angeles audiences have an opportunity to see a pre-Broadway national tour engagement of Jekyll and Hyde, starring Constantine Maroulis, that we all remember from
his
2004 appearance on American Idol and making it into the finals, etc. And you know, the lovely thing about Constantine when you see him is that you remember what he was like when he first was introduced to the country, but he really has become, for lack of a better term, a baby of Broadway. You know, and his career has now just expanded, you know, hugely with his huge success in Rock of Ages. The lovely thing about Jekyll and Hyde is the way that Frank Wildhorn have worked to it's not just a matter of rescoring it, rearranging and just kind of adjusting it so that it matches what Constantine is known for. I mean, you know, very few people know this, but he was trained musically to sing classically, to sing operatic.
Right.
And, you know, his love of music geared more toward 1970s, 1980s, and that's what he's known for, but that's not what he studied originally. So now he can demonstrate both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. So they've actually taken the original, the one that we're familiar with, and they've gone back to the book.
And sure, and I actually would really encourage everybody to, if you can get
even time, if you've seen it before,
it's a different, it's not a different take on the story. I mean,
right.
Certainly the story that played on Broadway for, you know, 5 years from 97 until I think 2001, is my math correct? Yes, my math is correct. For 5 years on Broadway, you know, the story is essentially the same, but it's brand new look, brand new take. Director Jeff Calhoun has done a marvelous job realizing it, bringing it back to stage. He says, and I'm also paraphrasing him. He is quoted as having been said, this production of Jekyll and Hyde is not so much Victorian as it is Victoria's Secret. And when you listen to that terminology and you then you take a look at the steampunk creativity that they've put in not only the set but in the costuming, it really gives you a very different take on it in addition to the way that they've rescored it.
Wow.
And fun fact, Constantine, I mean, backing up, historically, the role of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde has been performed by a baritone. Mm. Constantine is the first rock tenor to perform this role.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That sounds very exciting.
No, and that, and I'm looking...
I also want to add, Grammy nominee Deborah Cox is playing the role of Lucy Harris in the show as well.
And great R&B singer.
Oh, my goodness. Fantastic singer.
You know, I saw that show in its embryo stages at the Alley Theater in Houston when Linda Etter was doing it. They were trying to get it...
Jekyll and Hyde?
To Broadway, yeah.
Oh, really?
At that point. Oh. Yeah, which was phenomenal. You knew it had legs and that it would be something special. This sounds amazing, what you're talking about, this new version.
And looking ahead at the season, it couldn't be more... It's just such a wonderful... I mean, a hodgepodge, but not in a negative way. It's a great mix. It's a great potpourri.
Jekyll and Hyde, Paul, we didn't say the dates. February 12th through March 3rd. That's coming up soon.
Right. And then right on the heels of that, March 8th to the 10th, it's I guess that's a three-nighter. That's Mike Tyson, Undisputed Truth, directed by Spike Lee, which are...
Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, sure I can. Absolutely. You know, our fearless leader, James L. Niederlander, the son of James M. Niederlander, the owner of our organization, you know, he went into conversations with Mike Tyson and asked him about his thoughts about doing a one-man show. His show is actually written by his wife, Kiki Tyson, and they brought in Spike Lee aboard, and they've formed this really fantastic 90-minute in-depth look at his life. I mean, it's him telling his life story, but it's not one of those, hey, I'm Al Jolson and I'm going to make the Jolson story and, you know, 90% of it is going to be fictitious and 10% of it is, you know, anecdotal fact. I mean, he really goes above and beyond to tell good and bad about the events that have happened in his life. Mm-hmm. And to watch somebody on stage bare their soul for an audience, irregardless of what your thoughts may be about him from past circumstances or today, it really is very moving to watch somebody like that on stage.
I bet.
And in the very short amount of time in doing advanced publicity with him, I got to tell you something. This is one of the joys of my job. One of the joys of my job is being able to be there in the room when great epiphanies like this are had. And it's one of those things that makes you focus on the person and not things that other people are saying about him. You know,
right.
You know, let him tell the story, and it's going to be an interesting night of theater.
Well,
you know,
and the opportunity to see the actual person who it's about tell his own tale is another thing.
Initially, the reason that I got very excited about it is because, you know, I'm a Nintendo generation child, so I remember buying Mike Tyson's Punch-Out and getting frustrated and not being able to beat Mike Tyson at the very end of the game. So, you know, I wanna go up to him at the end of the night and say, hey, how do you beat yourself in the game? Seriously, because I cannot figure this out.
There's got to be a code or something.
There are so many.
007-8386. Got it. But there was a code that you can enter at the beginning of the game to advance toward Mike Tyson. I forgot what it is, but I digress.
Who knows this? So that's the 8th through the 10th, and I'm just going to go through the remainders because we don't have time to give them their due, but then Catch Me If You Can is March 12th to the 24th.
It's the first U.S. national tour coming off.
And then Beauty and the Beast from the March 26th to April 7th, smash hit Broadway musical.
Uh-huh. Still one of the greats.
And then, speaking of one of the greats, West Side Story, April 9th through the 14th.
More than 50 years ago that was on Broadway. I know. Maybe it's still living.
When the last time they did it there, we were lucky enough to have George Chakiris and Russ Tamblyn on our show the week that was on. We had Riff and Bernardo right here.
That's right, and we had the two young stars.
Yes. That was our first remote. We went out to talk to them. Yes.
And our lovely friends at the Egyptian Theater did something really nice for us. They did a special screening of West Side Story, and George Chakiris was the special guest and came and did a chat back with the audience.
Oh, great.
He's such a fantastic guy, too.
And then Rain, May 7th to 12th, Get Back L.A. That's the experience, the Beatles with Rain. I've read about them. It's supposed to be astounding.
Yes.
That's the 7th to the 12th. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert from the 28th to June 16th. And then Sister Act from July 9th to 20th. What a season you got.
This is amazing. You just condensed 7 months of theater into 7 seconds.
I'm sorry.
No. I'm impressed. That's really fantastic.
Well,
I have a time lapse of a pregnancy.
I have crib notes. We only have 5 minutes left, but I want to chat with you both about what we usually do at the end of our show.
Before we do that, Paul, we should tell everyone how they can get tickets at the Pantages Theater.
Do you have that handy?
Well, you know what? I can actually just kind
of
spat it off
Please
for
do.
You. The best thing that everyone needs to know is you got to get your tickets early, whether
you're buying
individual tickets. But the nice thing is that when you purchase season tickets from us right now, you can actually buy a flex package. If you go to BroadwayLA.org, you can purchase flex packages where you can actually mix and match and choose the performances, the dates that you want to go, what works with your availability. You can add performances. The important thing is that you're buying from us and that you can get a hold of us on the phone and you can make changes. We know who you are. We can talk to you. We'll give you the first opportunity when new things are coming to the theater. It's all good.
And how do people do that?
They can visit BroadwayLA.org. That's BroadwayLA.org.
Okay.
And you can also call our season ticket office, which is area code 866-877-BWAY, B-W-A-Y.
Okay.
All right.
Good. And while we're giving information out there, let's put the information out for A Negro Speaks of Rivers. That's at Pomona College at the Allen Theater. That is January 31st at 7 o'clock, and that is at 300 East Bonita in Claremont, California. 213-300-5412. It's a complimentary performance, but reservations are required. And Benny, would you throw that email out again, or the web address again?
Sure, BroadwayLA.org. Or if you want to have a little fun, we call it Flex Your Musical. So you can actually visit FlexYourMusicals.com. It's like flex your muscles. Get it?
Great.
Boom.
Got it. I'm sorry. I gotta be big on the uptake. Margaret, as we close out, 3.5 minutes, do you have an on-stage disaster you can share with us? Something that went wrong in performance that was funny and embarrassing and something for our to wrap our show up with?
I think the funniest and most embarrassing thing, I was in Romeo and Juliet in Chicago, and I tripped on my dress just as I entered the stage and tore the entire front of the dress off.
Oh,
wow.
Just staying on verse. You got your little lines going. You have to keep all your stuff hid.
Chicago is not the city to lose your top in, let me tell you.
No, it wasn't.
Who were you playing in?
Juliet.
Juliet? Oh.
I've been Juliet and the nurse. I've done the whole life of the play.
Oh, man. Just stepped on the dress and just walked out.
Just stepped on it. And it was just one of those places you stepped on that particular spot and it just...
And so what did you do? Did you keep going?
That's live theater. You have to just keep going. You can't say, I'll be back.
You just cover yourself?
Hang out. After a while, it becomes part of the thing. You
right.
Know?
Yeah. Look how shy she is.
She's
look at what she's
shy.
Doing.
A little flower of a girl. Yes.
What an interesting interpretation. Betty, how about you?
I actually have a similar wardrobe malfunction. But
you lost your dress, too?
I wasn't wearing a dress that day. I don't wear dresses on days I do red.
Not when you're working.
Come on, guys. Seriously. No. What happened was that, you know, I always, Michael and Paul, you've seen me on the red carpets before, and I'm usually wearing my schnazzy suits. Well, the thing is that I accidentally grabbed a suit from my closet that morning that was a suit that I wore regularly when I was 25 pounds heavier.
Oh.
And also that day, I had forgotten my belt. So by the time we got to about maybe 5:30, and I put the suit on, and I'm thinking, I didn't lose that much weight. And I looked at the tag, and I said, oh, my goodness, this is the suit that I was wearing 25 pounds ago. So I didn't have my belt. So I basically was trying to do the entire red carpet, and everyone thought that I was being very regal by keeping my hand, my right hand behind my back like I was greeting royalty. In actuality, it was grabbing the back of my pants and just holding them up.
Yes. We're being welcomed by Napoleon. What is that? Oh, my God.
Yeah, actually, good point, because I didn't have my tie that day, either, so I had to have my hand across my chest.
But don't the suit fit good? It's an old joke. Yeah, don't
exactly.
The suit fit good?
Well, that's hysterical. A little-known fact about Benny Aguayo, ladies and gentlemen. So when you see him on the red carpet, check out that suit.
Check out the suit.
Make sure it's the right suit.
It has been a pleasure having both of you on the show. And I want to throw that contact information out there one more time, just as we wrap it up, because of all the great shows that we mentioned. Of course, Margaret Lorena Hemp's show, A Negro Speaks of Rivers. That's a Rivers. That's a one-nighter, we should say. And that's January 31st at 7, the Allen Theater in Claremont, California, 213-300-5412. And Benny Aguayo, who's been telling us about all of the incredible offerings that the Pantages has again this year. And Benny, the website again for
BroadwayLA.org. And actually, really, really quick, within the next couple of months, expect information about our upcoming season. It's going to be fantastic.
Ooh. You heard it here first.
We're not revealing it as yet.
Nice try.
Okay. It's okay. But I did manage to fit all of our sound bites into one show. I think
you
that's
did.
A first.
Yes, you did. Okay. So get out there, see Peter Pan with Kathy Rigby and Jekyll Hyde and Mike Tyson and Catch Me If You Can and Beauty and the Beast and West Side Story, Rain, Priscilla, The Desert, and Sister Act, all at the Pantages Theater.
Yeah, great.
This season.
A pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Hope you had a good time.
Thank you, Paul.
As always, we'll see you next week.
You bet.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.